I'm here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this the concept of Man Show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Guys, I'm really sorry. Just really, really just want to start out this episode apologizing. Just being sorry.
Okay.
I have not been posting our episodes in a timely manner recently. I'm sorry. I've been really, really busy. And if you're listening to this one right now, the last one we did, we interviewed Paul Rugg, but at the moment of this recording, I still have not even posted it yet.
Mm.
And so that was a very interesting interview with Paul.
Yeah, we talked about cartoons, which is...
We talked about cartoons, television,
yeah,
storytelling. It was really good. It was a good interview.
He was also genuinely funny.
Yes, yeah. But man, the last about 5 weeks or so have just been possibly the busiest that I've ever been in my life.
Mm.
So,
Are you landing anywhere?
I'm hoping so.
Busy why?
Yeah, I'm hoping like I'm reaching a point where there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And the light that I'm seeing is not the train coming at me,
right,
to be hit.
But if it is, you get some time off at a minimum.
Yeah. Eternal.
Some time off. Yeah. I mean, probably.
Right. Which is something we're going to talk about tonight.
I really don't know what your odds are of surviving getting hit by a train. They seem low.
Extremely low.
They have to be low.
They have to be. Yes. But that's what we're going to talk about.
I mean, like, crushingly.
Crushingly.
Low.
But that's what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about death.
We are going to be talking about
preparing
death.
Preparing for eternity. So that'll be a uplifting, fun topic to talk about as we enter or approach.
I mean, I think it should be exciting, lighthearted.
Well, I mean, this is what we live for.
Yeah, that's true. There's when you start to think about it, death is very real. You know, it's just, in retrospect, you realize there are a lot of things that just like, it's not that they're not real, but they just don't matter a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like death, man.
Death matters.
It's for real.
Yeah.
You know?
Death matters. That's a bumper sticker for you.
Yeah. No kidding.
What are we drinking tonight, Dave?
Today, we are drinking another one of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's products.
Mm-hmm.
This is Black Hole Cosmology.
Okay.
I chose it because of the name, like death, kind of like a, you know, it's like black hole. I mean, it's like, hopefully it's more of like a white tunnel. I don't know. Just to use it, to keep the analogy going.
Okay.
Anyway, but of
cosmology.
Cosmology, like of the ones in my cabinet that were available, this one had the best name for the topic today.
Okay, that's
so fair. This is a 15 year.
Okay.
So, and it's from a distillery,
Dalhuan.
That's, I had to look up a video how to say it. That was it.
I've never even heard of that distillery.
I haven't either. It's a Speyside.
Okay.
But, you know, they're making 15 years, so it's coffee, toffee, molasses. It's a single malt, originally from bourbon hogsheads, okay. married in this cask. So we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers.
I really it's got kind of like a...
To the order of all cosmos, our Lord.
Ooh, yes, indeed. Like almost like a plum-colored hue to it, don't you think? The lighting's not fantastic in here, but there's like a hint of... It's more than just red.
It looks very sherry.
Yeah, that could be it.
Colored. But it's delicious.
Is it?
Really good, yeah. I mean, all these from the single, the Malt Whiskey Society is very strong, high alcohol content.
Yeah, so they're all barrel proof.
So you can tell that it's strong.
They are expensive.
But, man, it sure is good.
But every single one I've had has just been just way above average. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just all fantastic, really.
Dude, how was your Christmas? Like, we haven't even really had a chance.
Bro. Christmas was awesome. Like,
we did go to the Catholic Comedy Festival. We didn't mention that, but we got a chance to go to that.
But if you listened to the last episode, you know that.
Correct.
Yeah, another great time in Phoenix.
Right. Go follow. If you're on X or Twitter, you should go follow Catholic Comedy. He's great. Great follow.
Yeah. I think we need more people in the country pursuing the idea of a Catholic comedy conference. I think, honestly, that this is a space that there is a lot of room for in the country. You know, clean comedy is already a thing. You know, there's dry bar comedy from I don't know if VidAngel puts it. I don't know really who owns, but when I get on VidAngel, dry bar comedy is there. I don't know who owns it, but you know, like, it's all clean comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that there's a lot of room for, like, specifically Catholic comedy. And there's some good, you can make a lot of good Catholic jokes because there's a lot of culture, there's a lot of backstory, right? Like, mm-hmm. And that is that's the setup you need for funny jokes, you know? So I would like to see more of these conferences
popping up.
Yeah, popping up all over the country. And then us getting invited to
go do
host
them.
MC. Come be funny at, because we're funny, dude.
Dude,
that's the thing.
Funny.
Like, we are funny.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I mean.
There have
obviously,
been times.
Not all the time.
There have been times in which we have been.
But
funny.
There are definitely occasions where we are funny.
There are glimpses, yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was good. Christmas was also wonderful. You know, like, I think personally, I think Jesus is like the best.
Mm-hmm.
His birthday, I'm a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
I like presents also. I mean, like, if we're just
being honest,
laying it all out there, I do like presents. This year, I think more than any year, at least a lot of, in my memory, I felt very excited to watch, like, the kids open certain gifts. You know, there were just certain things I knew that they were gonna really like. They weren't like crazy gifts, but they were just the right gift. Like, I just know you're just going to love this thing.
Yeah.
And these are all things that my wife put together or like found, you know, like my involvement was admittedly low.
Yeah. Same.
But I was still very excited.
For your kids and for mine.
Yeah. But really the big news around our house, your goddaughter, my daughter, Mary, first communion this Sunday.
Yes. Can't wait.
It's going to be awesome.
And
she is so, so excited.
My niece is also getting baptized the same day. So we're going
Ooh.
Baptism, welcoming in a new Catholic, then going to my goddaughter's first communion.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be an epic Sunday.
What a Sunday.
Yeah.
What a Sunday.
Yeah, no, that is awesome. Yeah, you're right. Getting to see kids open the presents. You know, Luke got a bow and arrow, which is awesome. Leo got like a 2.5-foot sword.
Did he get the 300 blackout that he wanted?
He did not get the 300 blackout. I mean, Leo, maybe when he turns 5, you know, maybe when he turns 5, but 4-year-old getting a 300 blackout was just not in the cards. Yeah.
Yeah. We just skipping the BB gun, going straight to the 300 blackout. Right. Yep. Yeah. So, but
like, I thought 5 was the 50 cal. You know, yeah, like, because right, the numbers, you right, know, it seems fitting.
Mm-hmm. But it was really great to do that. And I want to give a thanks to all of our patrons as well, who prayed for my youngest son, who just went through surgery. He came out of that well. Everything seems to be going according to plan. So I'm grateful for all the prayers. A lot of people reached out to me, texted me, you know, emailed me, all this, you know, saying that they're praying for him. So very, very grateful for that. Power Excellent. Of prayer.
Yeah, wonderful.
We're also going through Exodus right now.
We are.
Which has been interesting because we're not doing it with Juan this year. Juan started his own group, which I was really proud of him for doing.
Sure.
Because the thing is, like, the idea of fraternities with Exodus 90 is like you end up inviting guys in, and your fraternity gets so big that you actually have to end up splitting it up, right? You know, because and growing.
And
because,
that is a success.
Right. It's not considered.
So often people say we can't split up the group, you know. It's like, right, no, that's the goal. Like, we want the group to grow to the point where it needs to be split, and then we have several groups, and then those groups grow to where they need, you right, know, like, that's the goal. We want it. That's what should happen.
Yeah, it's one of those bittersweet things though, right? Because the thing is fraternity is built well when you suffer together. Right, you know, that's, yeah, it's the same thing with a football team or the army or your military. Anyway, like, the more when you suffer with other guys, yeah, it like forges this bond together that's hard, you know, that you want to keep intact.
Yeah,
and so you go through things and you want to keep it that way, but there's this
okay,
beauty of letting okay, that go, yeah, and like having growth. So let's talk about death. Let's talk about something that we're all not gonna get around.
I love death.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
So we... Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We got Jimbo Baggins in the house. Jimbo Kringle Baggins over here. I'm telling you, Jim, you look amazing.
Oh.
Jim, on the yummy scale, where does black hole cosmology... Where does it sit?
This is almost perfect.
Almost.
So what is that? Perfect. What is that?
4.98
people.
Wow.
We are climbing.
We're ascending.
We are ascending. Thank you. All because of Eros, we are ascending. That is not a joke. It's a true... Go back and listen to our episode on Eros with Deacon Harrison Garlick, and that joke will make sense to you. It's just not a joke.
Look,
there he is. See?
Yep.
He's our own personal Saint Nick, mm-hmm, right here on the Catholic Man Show. And he's also our bodyguard and our porter. And the thing about...
And a shipping logistics manager.
Yeah, that. But the thing about Saint Nick is he actually did punch a dude in the face one time, so they say.
Potentially.
Personally,
I'm all for that tradition.
Yeah, I'm in. Like, you can come up with your, like, well, the historian's like, well, you know, he probably wasn't even at the council of blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like, you know what? You can shut up, yeah, all right? Because I know St. Nicholas punched a dude in the face because I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones.
Yeah. Right?
That's how I know things.
So something else I did.
Yes, and I have a story, too, after you tell your story.
Okay, so I'll be quick.
But yours is good. I think you got to get yours in.
Yeah, so I went to Sikh for the first time.
Yeah.
I've never been to Sikh before. Those who are listening probably have been to Sikh. I think you and I have been about the only guys under 40 years old that have never been to
It's just
Sikh.
Tough. I've wanted to go every year, and we've been invited to come to our podcast there.
Right.
But it's just terrible timing.
Incredible, dude.
For the family.
Incredible.
You know? If you're in college, great timing. When you have a bunch of small kids and you're leaving on the holidays.
Terrible timing.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but incredible. Absolutely
dude,
insane.
I'm so glad to hear you say that because, you know, everybody talks about it, and it's become this huge thing. And
yeah, it's like 20 to 25,000 people.
That's incredible. And what you worry about is like, you know, when something gets big, so often it loses its greatness because it's just so hard to keep up with.
Right.
So when you came back and had just all of this, you know, like
it was
these
incredible.
Great stories, I was so like, because I wanted it. You know, I want it to be amazing.
It was. It was something that it over exceeded my expectations.
Wow.
By a lot.
Wow.
Because I was kind of like you, is like, I bet this isn't going to be as great.
You know, like when everybody tells you about how good a movie is.
Right. You're like, it's probably not going to be good that great.
Yeah.
But everybody, it was just amazing. The speakers, I mean, even the breakout sessions are like keynote speakers, you know, everywhere. You know, so it's like, oh, here's Father Mike Schmitz. Here's Monsignor Shea. Here's Matt Frad. Here's, you know, like Jason Everett. Here is, you know, just every single person you could possibly think of.
The Apostle St. John.
Right, yeah.
He's doing a breakout session.
Right.
How did they get him?
Dr. Edward Shree. I mean, all the Sisters of Life, you know, and Daughters of St. Paul. And like, what I loved about it was walking around, you saw all of these religious, you saw the nuns, you saw... different, you know, all the different orders.
Yeah.
And they were all young and vibrant and alive and like lively and just on fire. You could just see everything like happening in motion. And you're like, you look at it and like, this is what Catholicism is. Like, this in a snapshot is what Catholicism is. It's like, there are the Dominicans and here are the Franciscans and here are the Carmelites and here are the Jesuits and here are like, and like, you just see all of the orders. And all of the laity, and then you have secular priests there, and like you just have everybody there, and it's just like this is incredible. And the thing is it's no longer really just a college experience,
yeah.
Because
it's the Catholic world, America now.
Because the guys and gals who were starting it, you know, 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, however long it's been going on, you know, and they worked it. You know, they're now older.
They're our age. We are.
Yeah, and they have families. And so, like, now they're bringing all of their family, you know, and there's, like, kids running around. I mean, dude, it was incredible. It was...
That's amazing.
To have 20,000 people all adoration together.
Uh-huh.
It was constant... There's constant adoration and just a room full of adoration. The logistics of being able to do a mass... Like, to pray a mass with 25,000 people and have a 15-minute homily and still get out in an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes was insane.
Unheard of. Unheard of.
It was incredible.
Well, good. That makes me like really want to, I mean, I already wanted to go, but it makes me really want to go to the point where maybe
if you don't go to any conference
might
ever,
go.
Like, you know, from now on, but you go to Sikh, it.
Boom. All right. Well, because everyone has been so fascinated by my homesteading stories, mostly probably because of my failures that have been kind of funny, I just wanted to give an update.
Okay.
Did
you fail again?
No.
Oh.
Not yet. But
why don't you hold your updates until you fail?
It occurred to me tonight that there's like big things I haven't thought of. I'm getting ready to get pigs. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to raise some pigs. I'm going to get some wieners.
Yeah, I'm actually up
in this piece.
Yeah,
And I've finished building the electric fence. You know, and so you have to train a pig to stay in the electric fence,
right?
Because otherwise, a pig's natural reaction when it gets scared is to run forward, run. So it approaches the electric fence, it gets shocked, and it will like plow through it, right? So you have to train it. No big deal. But then it occurred to me that like I got a trail cam for Christmas, and I put it out by my pond, which is very close. To where I'm going to be raising these pigs, there's coyotes there every day. And this occurred to me today after I've already like, I have worked for hours. I've put a lot of money into like prepping the site, you know, preparing it, getting it all ready. And it's like, I don't know. And this is, I have not had time to look into.
Like getting a dog or something like.
Or like, do you need like, are pigs mean enough to keep coyotes? I don't know. I've never done this. So. I'll have to find out. Yeah. I really am not sure.
Maybe a sheepdog or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
and I'm not getting a dog just to raise pigs because you know what? Pork is cheap.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see. Okay. We'll see about that. Anything else?
No.
Any other thing?
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of things.
Before we get into the topic.
No, let's get into the topic. Okay. I'm excited about it.
This whiskey, though. Totally great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about death.
Before we do, I mean, this is where we're
This is the book we're pulling from.
Thomas A'Kempis.
Yep. He's kind of one of those guys who's so well known for, you know, The Imitation of Christ. Mm-hmm. Such, like, one of the greatest spiritual works, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's, you expect him to be a saint.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even in Imitations of Christ, he talks about, like, the importance of meditating on death, but he doesn't actually go into it deeply.
Yeah.
Right? You know, he kind of says it in passing, almost like, oh, yeah, you should obviously know about this and, like, uh-huh. know how to do it.
Yeah.
But then the priest who's been... Tan Books has just been putting out some stuff on fire recently. Like, they have been, like... translating some old stuff, you know, to get into English so we can read it. But Father Robert Nixon...
It's amazing how much is not in English.
I know. But Father Robert Nixon has been translating a lot of texts into English that and reviving it. He did this one, The Meditations on Death, because apparently they found the corpus... I don't know if they had it or they found it or whatever, but they had the corpus of the work of Thomas A'Kempis and realized, like, hey, this isn't in English. And... he talks about it in Imitation of Christ, the importance of preparing for your death and meditating on your death.
Yeah.
But then he doesn't actually go into, like, how to do it or what that really means.
Yeah.
And so this is a phenomenal book.
It is. It's a short book.
It's very short.
It's set up much like The Imitation of Christ, where the first half
70 pages
is a treatise on the topic, and then the second half is a, like, sort of a discourse with our Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where, like, he puts himself in a scenario basically like where he's dying, and now here's his own thoughts about, like, oh, I'm dying, like reflecting on his hypothetical life. Mm-hmm. So it's set up the same way. I wouldn't call this a super deep dive.
Well, it's only 70 pages.
Yeah, it's
and the pages are small. So and
it's but it is a it's there's a lot here to think about.
It would be would you say it'd be a really good Lenten read?
Total. Oh, it would be a great Lenten read because, first of all, you could read it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could read it in just a couple days.
Or like an hour.
No, I don't. I can't read it in an hour, but there are some Maybe people who can. Hours. Some people can read crazy fast. I'm just not one of them.
I think I could. And I'm not a fast reader. I think you could too.
No, because it took me more than that to read it. I think it took me about 2.5 hours to read.
Okay, fair enough.
So. Let's get into it. We'll just kind of... these are just things. They're in no really particular order. I am just wanted to pull out things, little tidbits, for us to discuss.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm in.
Okay. So the first one is, I think the best place to start, obviously, the premise of the book is that we should live as if we could die at any moment and live each day as if it could be our last.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's just the attitude of preparing for death. Because if you wait until death is approaching, you haven't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what, you know, a lot of the saints have said is that, you know, we're just pilgrims. You know, and mm-hmm. the whole purpose of this life is for this moment of death. Like, we're preparing right now for that moment of death. Everything that we've done in this life leads up to the moment of death to determine where eternity is.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the opening sentence here is a popular and venerable saying variously attributed to Socrates, Plato, and Cicero asserts that the whole of the life of the wise person should be a preparation for death. So if you're wise, your life is, all of it is just simply preparing to die. Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Start with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we get back on the other side of this break, we're gonna really get more into the topic. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, this is Nick with Exodus. And I want to invite you to consider joining us for a 90-day spiritual exercise, which you may have heard of before. It's called Exodus 90. And if you've ever thought, man, I really am on my phone a lot, or man, I probably take work too seriously, or I drink a lot, or maybe there's a lot of other things that you think like, man, I should probably cut back on that. I'm not very present, you know, to my family, to my wife, even at the end of the workday. I want to invite you to come check out Exodus 90. Go to startmyexodus.com. We start January 1st, and this is really all about growing in your faith, growing your prayer life, and be more present to those around you so that you can become the man that God has created you to be. Startmyexodus.com.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Talking about death. I want to give a shout out to our new patrons. We have a bunch of new patrons who jumped on board in December, the end of the year. If you could go to if you're interested in wanting to support the show and wanting to receive a Catholic Man Show Glenn Karen glass, it's just $10 a month, patrons. And you can also get more than that if you sign up as an annual member for higher amounts, like beer glasses and things like that. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. We'd love your support. All the support goes back into the show.
So it does.
Dave and I do not take dollars from Patreon.
Yeah, because we're already like rich.
That's not true at all.
We have like hundreds of dollars.
No,
in the bank,
barely.
I do.
So, Bitcoin. Okay.
I'm just saying, Bitcoin.
Okay. So before the break, we were talking about how the whole preparation, the whole life is preparing for this moment of death. Yeah. And that's what we should be keeping in mind. And actually, the things in which we're deciding to do, like in this moment, should be like, is this helping me prepare for death or right. is it not?
Yeah. And, you know, this is it's a very common thing, you know, with the whole skull, memento mori, mm-hmm. St. Jerome, mm-hmm. You know, he was, I think he was like in like the 300s or mm-hmm. 400s, mm-hmm. right? The idea of having death always before your eyes is not a new one. It's a deeply, profoundly Christian one because, right. you know, like the thing of Christianity is that, and this was unheard of at the time, that death has been conquered.
Right.
Right? That Christianity alone put forth the idea and the reality that the creator of life came to conquer death, right? And so no longer death is something to be feared, but death is something to be prepared for.
Yes. And know that if you die before you die, then you won't die when you die.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. I just made that up.
I just made it up right now. I mean, I know I've said it on like who knows how many other episodes, but I made it up again right now. It's freshly made up. So I want to, you know, this next point I think is so important because I think people do this without even realizing that they're doing this. Akempis says that the period of severe illness, which precedes death, for many is not indeed the ideal time for repentance. It is generally a time when the spirit and the mind are gravely weakened and strong resolutions have become virtually impossible. Genuine emendation of one's life is hardly meaningfully possible at all at that time.
Yeah, when I read that, I wasn't sure what to really make of that.
Well, I think people, they're not like aware that they're making this decision. And I think I'm guilty of this by saying, well, I'm not going to prepare for death because I'm not dying. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not dying. So why would I be preparing for death?
But you are dying.
I mean,
every day you are dying.
You are, depending on what you mean by dying, you are certainly approaching death at a constant speed. I mean, it's coming, right? And you don't know when it's going to be. And maybe you might not even get the opportunity to prepare.
Right.
Right. Sometimes, you know, you die in a car accident. I mean, you know, all right. kinds of things. I do hope. I have a list of ways I would like to die. Number one, obviously martyrdom. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Preferably a quick one.
Okay. It's my list. I get to pick. Okay. But martyrdom.
Without torture.
Yeah. I mean, I'm picking, right?
Yeah, right.
But number two would be long-term illness.
Okay.
Hopefully a short one.
long-term. A short long-term illness.
Right, because you know, when you're dying, the ability, the grace, the gift to really be able to, you know, like, hey, I'm going to die in like 3 weeks or a month or whatever, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what a gift, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to put your house in order, really put your soul in order, make mm-hmm. sure that you're ready to welcome death with open arms. Because, you know, it's really just the transition into eternity. And
mm-hmm.
I want to do it the right way.
Yeah, isn't it interesting? So I read a book, or I listened to an audiobook not too long ago. The title is called Stoner. It's by John Williams.
Okay.
It's an older book, but it's about a teacher. And at the end of the book, he's dying. And it's a brilliant, brilliant book. It's very interesting. Not one that I would have
It's called picked. Stoner?
It's his last name, yeah.
Okay.
And it's not one of the books that I would have picked, but it's a masterpiece in the way he writes, because it's a common day man like language, but it's very poetic still in the way he writes. Anyway, he talks about how he's writing about the end of this guy's death and how he like sees it coming.
Wait, say this again. I'm sorry. I may have missed something. Somebody else is writing about somebody else's death.
No, the author is writing about the character's death. Like he is like dying. The character is dying. And the John Stoner, Stoner is he's realizing that he's dying, but he's holding on for a certain thing. And it's so interesting to me that there seems to be a moment in death where you're able to hold on and like,
yes,
fight,
right?
Like to get like maybe like, oh, I want to see my son one
right
last,
you know,
time.
Yeah, like your son is on his way, like,
right?
People do that.
Yeah. And
then
like
as soon as they get
on
here,
to it,
they say their piece and they let it go.
And they let it go.
Isn't that fascinating?
It's so weird. Like,
yeah, like you have the
like
ability
have some
to hang
type
in.
Of, yeah, some type of control to like hold on to life.
Right.
For
there's still some free will at the end.
Right.
You know, I do think that that's absolutely fascinating. I have no idea how you do it, but somehow,
yeah,
people. Like, oh, your heart's going to stop, but you can will it to keep going.
For just,
you know,
a little bit longer.
And maybe it's not. Maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's that person simply like pleading with the Lord, Lord, please let me see my son before I die.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, everything I know about Jesus seems like he would be, like his generosity is going to be overabundant in the end. Right? And so yeah, maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Right.
But it is a very common and amazing thing.
This all like brings back when my grandfather died, how he died was just such a glorious death.
Uh-huh.
Cuz he had, you know, he was there in his house, surrounded by his family who he loved, and they were all praying the rosary for him.
Mm,
you
amazing.
Know, and so like he was there dying with his family around him. They were all praying the rosary. Like, to me, that is such a beautiful death.
That's number three for me right there.
Yeah.
It's actually number two. That's actually number two.
Yeah.
The illness.
But
that's how I want it to end.
It's just so, like, and like, if you had to pick it out, like, right, you know,
yeah,
to see the fruits of your life, you know, literally the fruits of your life,
yeah,
around you, surrounding you,
especially
loving
in
you.
His case, he's got a big family.
Right.
You know, and like, gosh.
Praying the rosary, you know, having mama, lead him to our Lord. Like,
yeah,
man, that's awesome.
That is amazing.
But I do think that it is important. So this is the reason why it's so important to prepare for death during your life, because if you let your if your life is giving way to your passions constantly, you know, yeah, just allowing your appetites to control your life. You're blind. Sin makes you dumb. It blinds you,
totally,
right? And so, towards the end of your life, you may be clinging on to things that actually don't actually matter at all for about your eternity.
Yeah.
And you're hanging on to those things, whether they be money or fame or power or your business or, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. even your family. I mean, this is what Jesus says, right? You have to put it all aside for me.
Yeah, totally.
And so there, it disorder begets disorder. If you have disorder in your life, all throughout your life, you could be blind during mm-hmm. the time of your death to where God's wanting to give you all this mercy, give you all this grace, give you all these opportunities, right. And you just don't see it.
And yeah, you don't realize that you're telling, like, you're crowding Jesus out saying, Jesus, no, hang on. I'm trying to do something important here, Christ.
Right.
You know, and Christ is sitting there telling you, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're about to die. And that's something that I have found very helpful in my life. There have been times, I'm not a very stressed person. I'm not prone to stress. But there have certainly been times where I've been anxious about something, or, you know, maybe like a relationship, maybe the way someone said something to me that bothered me, or whatever it is, something that has been disturbing my peace, mm-hmm. right? And occasionally, I will get this moment of like clarity of, it's a grace from the Lord, I know, to put that in perspective and remind me, Dave, think about the end, right? And I will do that. I'll think about, at my judgment, how important is the thing that I'm sitting here losing my peace over?
Mm-hmm.
How important is this really going to be at my judgment? Is this going to be something that, you know, like, I'm going to be happy, I put so much weight in and effort and emotional energy or whatever? And so far, 100% of the time when I've thought about that in those moments, it's been like, ugh, this is going to be a pointless moment in my life. This is, you know, and it really helps to let it go.
It's hard to think about that until you recall, like, one of the things that really clicked with me when you're talking about this was recalling back in high school. Like, how many things you thought were so important.
Dude, high school is the perfect example, because you always think this moment or with this girl or whatever is like the most important or biggest thing that's ever happened to me. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Right.
You know?
And then
you're just like
the moment you graduate, you realize that actually didn't matter at all.
Or even a week later.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Well, I didn't have the maturity to understand even a week later. Like,
but sometimes
it took years for me to look back and be like, actually, that meant nothing.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna marry Susie. You know.
Anyway. Okay, let's talk about hell when we get back.
Okay. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Jimbo Baggins at the door. We're talking about death.
Really for Jim.
Yeah, I mean, this episode brought to you by Jim.
No, brought to you for Jim.
For Jim, yeah. Dedicated to Jim.
Dedicated to Jim.
Thanks.
Yeah. Because the thing is, Jim, I think that you probably outlive all of us. And so, like, I want to get this out now because I might not later have the opportunity. So, oh, Jim, congratulations. His wife retired.
Oh, yeah, Kathy.
Kathy is retired.
Yeah.
They've both punched the punch card. What do you just punch the punch card? That sounds redundant. Check the punch card. Whatever. They did it for the last time. They're way to go. Hey, very happy.
They weren't
for
hourly anyway. Neither one of them.
I know,
are.
But it's a figure of speech. It's a metaphor, Adam.
Okay. Sorry, I was taking it literally.
Gosh.
Okay, so we're talking about.
All right. So we're talking about death. Let's move on. Let's talk about he goes through multiple sections here. One of them is the torments of hell.
Mm.
Okay. And obviously, like, I think this goes without saying, the reality of hell for the people who are there is much worse than we can all imagine. Okay.
And it's only going to get worse.
Yep. Okay.
The reality is they don't have their bodies back yet.
Guys, it's bad. It's bad.
And it's going to get even worse.
Yeah. You're right. One of the things he says, Thomas A. Kempis says, and this really hit home for me. And when I read this, I was like, oh, you know, the thing is, I think that's probably true. He says
it's like
that
no caps.
He says, it is said that the fire of hell exceeds the heat of earthly fire to the same extent that our earthly fire is hotter than a mere painting of fire. Let that sink in.
The reality is, it's not hot. The painting isn't hot.
The painting's not hot. It's not even hot.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, that a earthly fire is hotter than a painting of fire, and the hellacious fire will be hotter than the earthly fire in that same degree. Like, I don't even know what that means, but it's bad, okay? It's going to be bad. And I think that's true. You know, I think that because you could turn that on its head and say the same thing about heaven, right? That mm-hmm. Heaven is going to be incomprehensibly better mm-hmm. than anything you can imagine. And so I think that the inverse is true about hell, mm-hmm. that it will be incomprehensibly worse than your worst nightmare, right?
Yeah.
And I think that and obviously hell is a self-inflicted torment, right? Because everyone there has chosen it. Mm-hmm. And they are wallowing in their own pity and like self-destruction, mm-hmm. right? Because they know, I chose this place. And then I think that they always have before them the meaningless pleasures that they chose over the eternal bliss of heaven,
mm-hmm.
right? That how often are the sins that we choose just totally meaningless? I mean, how many times have you mm-hmm. chosen a sin? This happened to me many times, over and over and over and over again. I have chosen to sin because of a fleeting pleasure, and the pleasure is just gone. And now I look back, it's like, what am I? You know, like I made this choice for that. You know, you think, oh, that's going to satisfy me, and it just never does, mm-hmm. right? And we're choosing hell for those. Those are the goods we're worshiping and signing up for.
Yeah, something I was thinking about. When you said we were going to be talking about this, is that most of the time when we sin, it's because it's a desire for love. It's a desire to be seen. It's a desire to love.
A disordered desire.
Yeah, but
right.
It's a desire to, like, I want to be loved.
Yeah.
Whether that's a, like, hey, I'm going to make myself sound better than I really am. I'm going to throw this guy under the bus so that way I don't get in trouble. I'm lusting after this person because I just want to be loved.
Right.
Right? It's like I'm putting a disorder of the desire to being loved into a finite mm-hmm. thing.
I need to know that I'm worthy.
Right. Because
of
I want to be
loved.
Seen.
Right.
I want people to love me. Like this is something that, you know, as you, like, you want to walk around and be like, I want people to recognize. I want people to know, like, who I am. I want people to love me.
Right.
I want my wife to love me. I want my kids to love me. I want, like, my friends to love me. I want people to love me. I want them to see me.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with it, with this disorder, is that you're putting this desire into finite things that will never satisfy you.
Yeah.
The thing that will satisfy you is knowing that you are loved, that you are a beloved son of God,
mm-hmm.
and that he loves you and he sent his son down to die for you so that you can be with him forever in heaven. And the torments of hell is this desire to be loved. And knowing that you put disorder into this desire to being loved, and that now you are all alone.
Mm.
You know, that you are utterly abandoned.
Yeah.
And you chose that abandonment.
Yeah, I mean, so often we try to hang our hat on a hook that cannot bear the weight, okay? Even like when you have a sacramental marriage, you have a happy marriage, right, where your wife or your husband is obviously going to bring, like, deep satisfaction. You know, like, her presence or his presence in your life is going to satisfy you in a deep way, but they cannot ultimately satisfy you,
mm-hmm.
okay? The satisfaction that you receive because of the sacramental union that you bear is because it is an avenue of grace. It is a contact with the divine, right? And your participation in gift of yourself to that other person puts you in that communication with our Lord. That is why you get That's why there is any satisfaction in it at all, because it's a difficult and arduous thing to do. It's an arduous vocation. But yes, when we hang our hat on the goods, earthly goods, this is, I think, devotion to Saint Joseph is so important. I feel like he is really the saint for
a good death.
Like a good, yes, not only a good death. That's not what I was thinking, but yes, obviously that one. But also, I feel like he is the saint to help disconnect from earthly desires, right? And helping us order our mind and our appetites and our will towards using the things of earth, because they are good. They have a goodness, but they have not ultimate goodness, right? And so to remind ourselves, it's so easy to get distracted on and think, oh, that's what I want, that's what I need, and you focus on those things.
But even the sacramental reality of marriage, like, that you just brought up, actually orients us in understanding that that there is more. Because the sacrament of marriage only lasts unto death, right? And so it's only the sacrament of grace is poured out during your life so that you can prepare for eternity. This is your vocation. This is the means in which you achieve the end, namely heaven. But marriage ends at death.
Yes, it does. It's over.
And it's
you're not married in heaven,
right? And that's because then you enter into the banquet, the wedding feast of the Lamb,
right?
Which is infinitely better.
It will be something like a marriage with everyone. It's not that. Like I hesitate to even say that because I think that can be confusing.
Right.
But let's move on to the joy of heaven.
Also, hold on before we do.
Okay.
About hell, I do want to say, like, just like 2 days ago. Maybe 3 days ago, I just picked up Dante's book, Inferno,
heavy.
And like it was so crazy to reread some of that again. Like all of a sudden, I realized I'm in Canto 5. Like I've been like reading this for what I felt like half a second, but it's just so like captivating of how he lays out.
Since you bring that up, this is a very Dante passage that Akempis has here. He says, "Hell is an exactly measured retribution. Each one will suffer in the particular limbs or members whereby which they committed their sins whilst on earth." I mean, this is a very Dante. I mean, Dante's Inferno, especially the contrapasso. You know that you have a punishment in hell, which is like the inverse of your sin, right? Or or it actually kind of is your sin. It's your sin played out for eternity.
Yeah.
He says, "Alas for those whose sins are against chastity, the pains and torments which they will experience can hardly decently be described in this treatise and are therefore left to the imagination of the reader."
But in Dante, it's the first.
It's one of the higher levels of hell, like the not so bad levels of hell,
which is an oxymoron.
Right, I know, but right. By comparison,
right.
You know,
because intellectual sins are way worse.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So let's move on to the joys of heaven. We're on our way there. We're going to pass by the final judgment because he says one good thing. He says Christ will display at our final judgment there the bodily signs of his most noble passion and the wounds which he sustained for the sake of our redemption. And it just made me think about like the guilt for those in hell. Well, no, really for all of us, because we're all guilty of this. The guilt we will feel knowing that he suffered for us. He like went through all of this suffering and that we just chose to reject him anyway. Everything he did for us. And we're like, you know what? Nah.
There was a nun at Seek, a beautiful, she's told a beautiful story. She's a sister of life nun, but she talked about how she actually had a wound on her hand and it was healing. She was like, "I wish I had a cool story to tell you about what happened here." She didn't. She was just like, I just cut my hand. But then she said she went to the doctor and they said, "Actually, we got to reopen this cut because it had bacteria inside there. There's like encapsulated in there."
Yeah.
And they're like, "We got to open it back up because it has to be let out and like to be able to heal."
Yeah. You got to get the let out.
Yeah. And so she said, like, how beautiful it is that Christ comes back to us and doesn't hide his wounds. He says, "Put your finger into my side because I will heal you." That I took on this burden.
Yeah.
So that you could have life forever with me.
That is beautiful.
All right. Hey, we're out of time on the Catholic Radio. Check out our podcast, thecatholicmanshow.com. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Isn't that beautiful, though? That's such a, like, a Daughters of Life. Like,
yeah, the Sisters of Life, dude. Everybody loves them.
Oh, yeah, it's Sisters of Life.
That's because they're amazing.
Yeah, but like, she was just talking about, like, how, like, that cut on her hand made her realize that Christ has, like, reveals himself even in the resurrection, even in his glorified body.
Yeah.
With the wounds still showing, so that he can say, like, this is, like, I'm leaving this open for you.
My gift for you. Fun fact, who was the first priest to receive the stigmata?
First priest to receive the stigmata. I do not know. I mean, because St. Francis of Assisi was a deacon, so, and he received the stigmata.
Yes.
It may have been one of the apostles. I don't know.
Padre Pio in the 1900s. I just found that out two nights ago.
I'd like to fact check that.
It was on Saint Cards. I was playing the game Saint Cards, and it was like one of the facts on
secular priest. No, he's an order. Like he's in the order.
It said first priest that like on record because it is likely. I'm sure that there have been many, many, many people who received the stigmata that like never told anyone. Right. In fact, nobody receives the stigmata. It's like, guys, check it out. You know, they all try to hide it and, you know, they're ashamed. It's like it seems like they're ashamed to receive it because they feel themselves like crushingly unworthy to bear his wounds. Right. Which is why, of course, they receive it because humility. But anyway,
so when we're making our way up to, you know, so we die, you know, we're being judged, and then we, you know, hopefully go to heaven.
Yeah.
I was reading a book recently, and this Benedictine priest was talking about how when you die, you know, he was talking about the importance of your guardian angel.
Uh-huh.
And how the guardian angel plays out so active in your life where we don't realize it throughout our life. We're so blind. This is another one of those like almost high school moments where you realize like, I was just so blind back then. Yeah. I was just so stupid. When we die, we look back and be like, I'm just so stupid. I cannot believe like how active of participation that my guardian angel took in my day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
And he drew this image that I'd never really thought about before about, you know, obviously your guardian angel taking you up for your final judgment. But a lot of people will have these inclinations to sin still on their soul.
Yeah.
You know, needs to be purified. This is what purgatory is, right? The purification of the soul to enter into heaven. You know, after making sure that you don't have any mortal sins on your soul, assuming that, right?
Right, right.
But he said, like, as they were ascending and the guardian angel was taking him up, the sins in which you were still holding on to, the inclinations of sins, the demons that were all playing out throughout your life trying to get you to fall as you're ascending up is still like gnawing at you on the way up, you know, trying to get you to, you know, like come back. They know I'm not going to get you back.
Right.
But they're still like gnawing at you almost, pulling you, trying to pull you back down.
And he takes a sword out and slices him in the face.
But he says like, that's almost kind of like, and like, it's super painful. And he says like, that's almost kind of like what purgatory, you know, like he was kind of making an analogy or drawing out a picture of saying like, this is actually kind of what this purification process is similar to, is that, but it's way more intense than what we think. Very similar to how we talked about the intensity of hell. Purgatory is going to be absolutely terrible.
Oh, sure.
It's only like, the only thing worse is going to be hell.
Right. Yeah. When we get to purgatory, we're going to wish desperately. It's like, I wish I had just not eaten the sandwich one day. Like one sandwich. If I had given it up, like as a penance. I'm talking about a tiny penance. Like the magnitude by which that will have like amplified grace in our soul is much greater here than it. I mean, the suffering is manyfold in purgatory. I've also heard that our guardian angels will escort us through purgatory. You know, it's not like they're going to be suffering because obviously they cannot suffer.
Right.
I have no idea if that's true. I do think it's a beautiful image, and if it, even if it's not true, I still think that there's
if they're escorting you, they're like their back is like this is spiritual beings. They don't even have physical beings, yeah, but they're like their back is to you. They can't like, even do that. I can't even look at you.
But if they were doing that, if they were putting their back to you, then they wouldn't be there, because they're spiritual, purely spiritual, and so they only are. They I mean, like as That's much as they can be said
I caveated to, like, that at the beginning,
be somewhere,
right.
But it's only like where they're thinking about, and so if they're like turning their back to you, it's so
the
to
power
speak,
in which that they act is where they're present.
Right,
I get it. I
yeah.
know.
Yeah, but. I don't know if that's true. It doesn't really matter, because I do think there's a good lesson to take, that like the love that your guardian angels have for you is so incredible,
mm-hmm.
right? I kind of often fall into the thinking like, well, it's their job. They're sitting here doing their job. Like I'm their job, and they're going to do a great, they're like going to work very hard.
They, especially you know, for, I mean,
and like, man, I have all the confidence in my guardian angel. But you're really selling them short in that mentality. They love you, like, just passionately,
mm-hmm.
to the point where they would like wait in purgatory with you, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I do want to get through some of the joys of heaven, and then I want to talk a little about the lament over time wasted, because
okay.
I think that. That's there's a lot of practical stuff.
I'm
there.
Here, like, it's only 9:45.
This is your house. Yeah, this is your house. I mean, you're not going anywhere.
At the end, could you talk about that? You said intellectual sins are worse than even
yeah.
sins against chastity.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, we can
write
do
it down.
Yeah.
Write it down. Do you have a
just,
pen?
Just don't let us
just
forget.
Kidding. Just kidding. So, the joys of heaven. He, when he starts talking about this, he suggests. He says, even though you will not be able to, try to imagine what the joys of heaven will be like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this
all,
is...
All the delights in the world like point us towards like what give us a small glimpse. So the moment in which you sing Alleluia for the first time at Easter and like they're hitting it hard.
I love that.
And
oh, man.
Like it's the first time you've said it in 40 days.
Yeah.
And like you get those goosebumps and the hair stands up on the back of your neck.
Do you
and
just
want to
like
belt
sing it out
as hard
yes,
as you possibly can? And like you just feel like this is the moment.
And like
you know, like and you were just like
at least our parish. There's a band. There's like well, like an orchestra.
Yeah, I wouldn't say yeah.
Band is not the right word. There's an orchestra. So the like the like you can the volume of music.
Yeah, it's like the crescendo.
You can really boom. Sing Alleluia as loud as you can. No one will hear you.
Right.
Which is the way it should be, you know?
And like that moment, you know, is like a little glimpse of what heaven's like, right?
Yeah, dude.
Like there's like this beauty there, right? All the fine things in life, like enjoying the conversations with, you know, the friendships in this life prepare us for the friendship that we'll have with Christ in heaven.
Yeah.
You know, the friendship, the times that you have with friends, the times you have with your family, those moments where you step back and be like, that was beautiful. The picture, the drawing, the poetry, the arts, the conversations, all these things are just like little slivers of beauty, like showing you like this is a glimpse of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we mentioned it already. That is Eros.
Right.
Right.
Ascend.
Yes. So he says, you know, that we should do this. We should try to think about the joys of heaven because it can be very efficacious in encouraging the cultivation of virtue and the resistance to the temptations of sin, which is interesting. I think that there's a lot there. It's easy to focus on avoiding the negative, but it's so much more powerful when you pursue the positive. It doesn't have the instant gratification. It doesn't have the instant effect. Avoiding a negative is easier to do immediately, but over but once you understand the pursuit of the positive, then there's the idea of avoiding the negatives
becomes like
silly. It's just silly. Like, well, why would right. that's, you're just
so this is
who cares?
This
you know,
this is what a lot of people call like the imperfect love versus perfect love. Right, so
right,
imperfect love is the desire. Like, I don't like. I'm doing this because I don't want to get punished,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing. That's a good. It's not.
It's good enough anyway.
Yeah. It's a good.
Yeah.
Right, because like you realize I don't want to do.
It's not the. It's not the best good.
No.
But it is
it's
good.
It's imperfect.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is still good. The perfect love is the desire to for the good, for the good's sake.
Yeah.
Not to avoid the evil, not to avoid punishment, but for the good's sake.
Right. And that's what the saints, the love that the saints
right.
have.
This is
right?
the heroic virtue. And so this is what, like, this is where virtue plays in, right? Is because this is where you desire the good for the good's sake, because you've gotten to the habit of doing this, and yeah. like, you don't think about it anymore. It just becomes like, this is my natural reaction. This is what I want. This is what I do. This is what I should be doing. And like, so those things build up over a course of time. Like, it's not something that you can do, you know, in a moment and all of a sudden you're a virtuous man, right? This is a course of time. And then that moment is where, is the virtuous is like, this is where you lay down. This is like, no greater love than this, then you shall lay down your life for another man. Like, this is the pure love. This is like the love that happens, the perfect love. It's like, I want to do this because I lay down my life for you because I love you.
Right, and you have to start. So, I think this is just a great place to start when you're pursuing that positive, trying to be like, I want to be a saint. Okay, right. So
we all do.
That like if we can have a routine of meditating on those joys of heaven, I also think that this is great practice for meditatio, for meditation, which is what leads us into contemplation, which, you know, should be like the goal of our prayer life, right? So this is great material to have, mm-hmm. you know, because I don't know if this happens to you. Sometimes, you know, I sit down to pray and I kind of have a habit of doing like, oh, when I think about, all right, I'm going to meditate about our Lord, you know, give me a launching, like a platform to, mm-hmm. to start. I tend to start in the exact same place all the time, and it will get tired in my mind, right?
Yeah. Because you go this, then this. Right. Is it because of the equation?
Yes, exactly. And I don't mean it to be that way, but it just is, right? Yeah. And so it kind of loses its luster. It loses its effect, mm-hmm. right?
Which is okay.
Right, but so you need, sometimes you just need like a new image or a new thought to ponder about our Lord. This is a great thing, like, to have as well, to ponder. So let's move on to the lament over time wasted. Oh, because no. Bro.
You're going to wait till the hour and some odd in that you're talking about lamenting over time wasted.
It's just
the people who are still listening right now, they're lamenting over the time wasted.
This is where it was
in
the book, okay? It wasn't first in the book. It was towards the end.
They're like, really? I've wasted an hour and a half waiting for you to get to this part?
So let me just go through some of these points.
Okay.
And you know what? Maybe let me just go through these and then we'll come back and discuss.
Okay,
that way...
I don't know if we've ever done that before.
I know. I don't think we have. I don't want to waste
it's
people's
like
time.
350 episodes in, and we're like, you know what? Let's try something new.
Okay, so there's only a handful here. At your death, you will lament over the time you have wasted during your life. That is a fact. Next. For the ways of sin were not the ways of delight and pleasure, as I had misguided... some of these come from the... part where he is now in dialogue with himself. Okay, so that's why they sound a little different. This is a dialogue piece. He says, for the ways of sin were not the ways of delight and pleasure as I had misguidedly imagined them to be, but rather the ways of difficulty, emptiness, and disappointment. And then with regard to unprofitable learning, how vainly and fatuously did I study these things, and thus I expended the precious time granted to me by God, and all for what? I came to know many, many things, it is true, but my own self I did not know. Yes. Yeah, exactly. This next one, oh man. Let's I'm gonna read this next one, we'll pause. I'm gonna save the last one for the very end. This next is, oh, tomorrow, tomorrow, false and lying tomorrow. You have deceived me, and I have allowed myself to be deceived. For by depending upon you, oh, elusive and illusionary tomorrow, I have permitted myself to be engulfed in the abyss of death. For you have abandoned me and fled from me. You, to me, there will be no more tomorrow. Hmm. The idea of, oh, tomorrow, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, always just depending on tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I read that, man, that hit me very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do that, right? Like when I put off the good, I should be striving for today because it seems a lot easier tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be hard if I did it today. I don't want to do it today. You know, there are other things I want, and I instead pursue those pleasures. Like it said, the ways of sin were not the ways of delight and pleasure as I had misguidedly imagined them to be, but rather they were the ways of difficulty, emptiness, and disappointment. Mm-hmm. Right? And yet I continually pursue them. I know that they're the ways of emptiness and disappointment and difficulty. And yet I pursue them anyway because I'm a fool and I'm an idiot.
Mm.
And I depend on tomorrow. Who is not here? Tomorrow has never been here.
And never guaranteed.
Right. It's always tomorrow. And so like that lot, it just really... I felt like that was very powerful because I waste a lot of time. That's the thing about me. Okay. Like,
yeah.
Adam, so this is, Adam, you are not a time waster the way I am a time waster. Okay.
I'm not a time waster at all. Like this is not, so
that's not your thing. Like I have wasted time. Okay.
I cannot absolve you. So here's the battle that I have.
Would you pray for me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
I do every day.
Thank you.
Here's the battle that I have. Because we only have a limited amount of time on this earth, I feel like I want to maximize that time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I feel like I fall into the trap of, God put me on this earth for only a certain amount of time, so I got to maximize it so I can do his stuff, you know, and do all these things. But...
And you end up in the same place, don't you? Like, working, and you realize, like, there was a good in front of me that the Lord wanted me to receive. And instead, I rejected it and wasted my time spinning my wheels. Because, I mean, that's...
I don't know if that... I don't know if that's the
okay.
case.
Okay, all right.
No, it's not necessarily that I'm wasting my time spinning my wheels.
Okay.
I do a lot, right? It's not like, I'm just like doing, like, I'm just trying to figure it all out. It's like, no, I do a lot.
Yeah. Do you feel like you do a lot and you do a lot of good things?
The problem
My question was, do you feel like those things are the things that you were supposed to be doing? Or do you feel like God is calling you?
Well, I struggle, like, ironically, being a Peeper fan, I struggle to be a leisurely man.
Uh-huh.
And as Catholics,
that's why, Adam, this is why we're friends,
right?
Because the balance between us,
right? We have two extremes.
The balance between us is essentially Jimbo Baggins over there.
He's the virtue,
Mr. Christmas.
Yeah. So, like, by definition, a leisurely man does not output a lot, right? A leisurely man does not.
I don't know. It is strange to consider the leisurely man in terms of output. That is it is an interesting thing to think about.
Right, because it's actually like it's counterintuitive almost.
Although
it's
I don't know. To me, the leisurely man does output. I mean, he works.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
But he does like one thing and does it well.
Yeah, and he doesn't work more than he ought.
Right. So this is something that I had a long discussion with one time with Dr. Milosh, is that actually, like, a Catholic man who's a leisurely man doesn't actually do a lot in his life.
Is that true?
Well,
I think he does a lot of things in his life. He just doesn't do things unnecessarily. He does what he ought, and he enjoys the rest.
All right, so as far as
and he does
utilitarian
what he ought,
purposes,
he
like,
does what he ought as well as he can.
Like a contemplative life right, if you're living a contemplative life, what does that mean? You're actually not, like, utilitarian wise, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, well, you are, but I said
from a utilitarian.
You're correct.
You're not doing anything.
Right.
And so a contemplative man, which we're all called to be,
mm-hmm.
if you're a man.
Or a woman.
you're called to that, right? And
yeah.
So I have this struggle. Where I struggle is, like, I feel like that God has all these things that he's wanting me to do, and I'm trying to do all of them, you know, because I only have this amount of time. Like I want to look at God, like, I want on my judgment, I want to say, Lord, I did everything I thought you were wanting me to do every single day. And, like, right now, in this season of my life, I feel like that he has a lot of things that he wants me to do.
Yeah, and
now,
he very well may.
And maybe I've poorly discerned. Maybe this is something that I've held on to for whatever personal reasons, some prideful reasons. I don't know. But this is the importance of prayer and, like, uniting yourself to God's will and, like opening yourself up to, like, what do you want from me, Lord? Like,
right.
Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening. My desire. So, like, what I don't want to do on my final judgment is lament over time wasted. Right? Sure. So, like, I am, from the moment I get up, I pray, I read, I eat, and then I go work, and I'm working, and I don't take time off during work. Like,
right.
My lunches are always short. Like, I am cramming as much efficiency and effectiveness as I possibly can in as much many hours as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, like, something that takes time to do, because, like, every time you're stretching yourself. Like,
yeah. So I think the question would be, just in this conversation, is that what not wasting time means?
Right. Yeah. Because a contemplative life.
Because I feel like you're saying, like, that's the way that you take things to an excess.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is, like, there's the active life and the contemplative life.
Right, and you're sacrificing the mentality of a contemplative life.
For the active life.
Because the contemplative life obviously is, like, the actual act of contemplation, like, in the morning when you're praying. But there's an ongoing element to it, right, where the work that we do, even while we're working, it should still, like, the truth, the reality, his presence should be before our mind always, right?
Yeah.
And I think that...
And I try my best to do that. Like, I pray.
Dude, I am so bad at that. Like, not because of lack of desire, simply from, like...
Like, I have several prayers right over there on my desk.
Dude, I have,
like,
all the prayer cards at my desk, all right? That's not it. It's just I want to have this, like, presence in front of my mind, and I just
don't.
I'm kind of absent-minded. I am absent-minded, right? So hopefully the Lord will have mercy on me, but...
Really?
You know what? One thing you said was, maybe I've discerned poorly, and it made me think, like, man, am I judgment? From this moment on, at least, I hope that the worst thing I can be accused of is poor discernment.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I feel like I could hold my head up a little bit.
So this goes back to some of the Thomistic understanding of, like, what discernment is. Like, the idea of discernment didn't really come into play until the Jesuits' spirituality. I'm not bashing on Jesuits. I'm just saying, like, this is the reality. And this is a good thing.
Jesuits, but, I mean, like, but Ignatian spirituality. I like to call it Ignatian spirituality.
Right. Yeah, but it's beautiful. But, like, the Thomistic understanding is, like, that doesn't make sense to them, right? Because it's just like, no, I, like, because I start in prayer, and because I have united my will to God's, everything that I do, I just do it for the love of God. Like, I don't discern. Like, it's not like I sit there and, like, I wonder if the Lord wants me to do this or this. It's like, no. I've already spent my time in prayer, and, like, I have my marching orders, and I'm doing that for the love of God. Like, I don't, I'm not thinking about, like...
Isn't it beautiful to see the two differences here? Because, yeah, on the one hand, you have an order who lives under obedience, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have to discern anything because everything they do has been ordered to them, right? This is when they pray, for how long, and then they eat, and then this is the job that you will do. Mm-hmm. There is nothing for them to discern, right? So the
that's more Benedictine than Thomistic, but yeah, yeah.
You're right. But still, like...
That's heavy Benedictine.
It is. But even the Dominicans, like, they still are, like, given jobs and order. Right. You know, you're right. Not to the degree that the Benedictines do, but still, the difference between living in an order where, you know, I mean, and obviously the Jesuits are in an order too, but they seem to have a lot of freedom. We should wrap this up. I do want to get to this last point,
and then Jim wanted us.
Oh yes. Okay, so let's talk about this because this last point, which comes at the end, not at the very end of the book, but towards the end of the book.
Okay,
he says, "When I look back on my life, can I find one single day which I have devoted entirely to the service of, the Lord? Can I find one single hour which I have dedicated completely to fulfilling the will of my Creator?" You know, like, that is a very convicting question for me. I mean, I have spent hours in adoration, but can I, even in those moments, even in that hour, can I really say I wasn't serving, like, myself at least a little bit? You know, like, oh, I'm doing the things I want in adoration. You know, this is what this is how I like to pray. You know, this is how I like to spend time with the Lord. I know for a fact I cannot say that I could find a single day which I have devoted entirely to the service of the Lord. I know that I cannot say that.
Okay.
And I question whether I can even say it for an hour. I mean, I have had hours where I could say I was blameless, right? Where
I guess it just depends what you mean by this, because maybe I don't understand the question, because I get up in the morning and consecrate everything that I do for the day to our Lord,
Certainly.
Through the Blessed Virgin Mary,
right? What I'm doing is I'm holding myself to the highest degree of scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. Is that
so? You're talking about I'm praying without ceasing.
Yeah,
is this the understanding? Because to me, this question does not resonate with me at all. Like,
oh really?
Mm-mm.
Oh gosh, dude.
Because I consecrate my day.
I can tell Jim and I. We were when I read it, I saw his face. He and I were both were like, ugh.
And maybe this is just a lack of maturity, a spiritual maturity on my part. But
I've been meaning to talk to you about
right,
that.
Right, but yeah. I consecrate the day to our Lord.
Yeah,
through the Blessed Virgin Mary, and say everything that I do, I give to you, and this is what I desire.
Okay, I do that too.
Okay.
But I say, everything I do, I give to you. But then, as I go about my day, mm-hmm. can I honestly say, oh, I did that because, you know, like that second donut, Lord, that one was for you. The first one was because, you know, like,
sure,
you see what I'm saying?
Of course, you have appetites that are still causing you.
But that's what it is that I don't think I can actually, there is not a day in my life where I could say, every moment of this day, Lord, I lived it for you.
Because I don't think I can either. If that's what you mean by that,
that's what I mean. I'm holding the highest degree of scrutiny, and that's what I mean. One single day in which I devoted entirely to the service of the Lord, right?
I consecrated it to you. I'm a human nature. I have human nature, and so I have. Irascible and concupiscible appetites, in which I have to combat all the time,
right?
Constantly,
mm-hmm.
And so there are times in which, you know, there's more intense battling in that, but I still have consecrated all of that to Him.
Oh yeah, yeah. That,
so I don't understand.
It's not from lack of desire.
I just don't.
I want to. I
just don't understand the question. I guess, is this praying without ceasing?
No, I think it's like. Actually, it's success. Were you successful in doing what you wanted? You know, you wanted to like have this day where every decision you made, everything you did for love of Christ. And of course you have this desire, right? Because you're a Christian and you live, you know,
yeah,
you,
but
you
we desire all fall to love. Short.
And we, but that's that, and that's the thing. We fell short. We didn't actually.
But we all fall short.
Correct. And that's what he's saying here is that like, it's about throwing yourself at the mercy of our Lord, right?
Absolutely. Like I can't spend 1 second without his mercy.
Yeah.
So like, this is why this doesn't make sense to me at all. Because if you take it to the extreme, then like, of course, you can't even say 1 second. Like, why even mess with a day?
I think I've had like possibly minutes where I was
not
like,
without his grace, not without,
well, of course,
cooperating completely 100% with his grace. Well, yeah. And so like, this is why the question doesn't make sense.
But the thing is, I think I've had minutes where I did cooperate. He gave me the grace and I said yes. I think I've had short periods of time. I know I have.
Yeah.
But a whole day? No. Like, I cannot say that I've gone a whole day in perfect cooperation with his grace. And that's because of me. I mean, we're talking about, this is like a judgment, you know, thing. When at your judgment, remember, that's really what this question is about. At your judgment, there's not going to be a single day where there's not something where you're held to account for.
Sure. But, like, we're not... No, I don't want
to. Okay, so I think the purpose of this question, the benefit we should be looking to like derive from it, is self-reflection, humility, repentance, and once again, turning back towards the view of death, okay, as we go about our life. So I don't think it's about a question of like, oh, can I be perfect or not? Obviously, we can't.
Right.
Even we desire to be, and that's good. Like, you know, like
But what does perfect mean? Right, because like this is the whole hammer example that we've talked about before. Like it's not necessarily being 100%.
Just for the people who don't know, the hammer example is a perfect hammer is a hammer that is being used for hammering.
Right.
It's filling its telos.
Right. So like that, like that's being what being perfect is.
Yes.
It's not like I am always
the perfect, like the most balanced perfect hammer of all time.
Right.
Correct. But this is, in this context, about death. That's what it is. It's like, yes, constantly, it's the call to repentance, you know, that call towards reflecting on my own life and my shortcomings, simply trying to be aware of them, you know, like, because the one right before this, or actually not right before it, but like about learning all of these things, I came to know many things, it is true, but my own self I did not know. Mm-hmm. So that's the context here.
That's a brutal one. That like how many times have you gone through and like learned something and it's like this is actually is not good for me to even
this learn. Is what actually Exodus 90 is so good for me on this because you know you can't just Google stuff because you want to
see I don't like that's not something that I have a problem with at all.
You don't Google stuff throughout the day? Like
I don't have time. Who has time to do that?
Like when
I don't have time at all to Google things.
Dude, you totally have time.
No, I do not.
Yes, because
I would love for you to spend actually a day with me and understand how busy I am.
When you're sitting at the dinner table,
I'm with my family.
Yeah, talking about things. And it's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. When was the, how does that? And it's like, I don't know. Let's find out. As a family, let's look it up.
I don't look it up. No, I don't do that.
Yeah, I don't either on Exodus 90.
I don't do that at all.
And I actually don't do it in front of my kids, but I will do it when I'm with my wife. Because we're talking about it and we both want to know.
I don't have time to mess with that.
I don't have time to talk to my wife.
I don't have time to like be Googling things. Like I don't.
You know, it only takes.
I have
a second.
Yeah, this is just personality differences between you and I.
Also, like, Adam, at this moment, it makes me think that you were like really bad at Googling things because.
No, I'm not. I know how to use like. Google is like something that I have to use all the time in my work. So, Jim, do you want us to actually talk about that on air, or do you want us to... Oh, we don't have time. Okay. We can talk about it off air.
Very good.
Very good.
So, remember your death.
Yes. To your death.
Please pray for me and mine, because I will
You're going to leave me out?
I will need a lot of help.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm just... Adam, we've already talked about how selfish I am. I was going to do you next. Oh. Okay.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
But you were too
busy. No, please.
You were too busy, okay, to even let me get to it.
Go ahead.
And also, I'm sure Adam needs your help too. So
cheers.